Next case is United States v. Chandler. Appellant, ready to argue?
Yes, Your Honor.
The government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Appellant may argue.
Good morning, Chief Justice Stuckey, members of the court. May it please the court, I'm Captain Alexander Navarro, and along with Mr. Mark Brueger, we represent the appellant in this case, Aaron Basic, Kevin Chandler. Chief Judge Stuckey, with the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you. The SJA in this case was disqualified from providing post-trial advice to the convening authority for at least 4 reasons. One, he performed the duties of trial counsel when he negotiated the specific terms in a prosecution exhibit. Two, his actions reflected a personal interest in this case. Three, he reviewed the legal correctness of his own actions. And four, there was a material factual controversy in this case. The SJA should have recused himself, and his failure to do so was error, and that error prejudiced Aaron Basic Chandler. I'd like to start with the SJA reviewing the legal correctness of his own conduct. 1106B in the discussion section says that an SJA may be ineligible when, for example, he must review his or her own pretrial action when the sufficiency or correctness of the earlier action has been placed in issue. In this case, before clemency, the ADC reached out to the legal office and requested a different SJA draft the SJAR. The SJA drafted the SJAR anyway, and then during clemency, the ADC objected to the SJA's involvement.
Well, what can the SJA do, because 705 specifically says that the SJA can be a part of this? So where do you draw the line?
Your Honor, you draw the line when, for the stipulation of fact, while 705 authorizes the SJA to initiate pretrial agreements, that's separate than actually negotiating the terms in a stipulation of fact, which is... Your Honor,
he's allowed to participate in the PTA, but he can't participate in the STIP. The STIP's always, the PTA usually hangs on the STIP.
Your Honor.
So where's that leave us?
Yes, Your Honor, and he was authorized to be a part of the pretrial agreement negotiations. However, the stipulation of fact, that is a prosecution exhibit admitted at trial, and that is left to trial counsel to negotiate with the defense counsel.
But where do we have any authority for that proposition?
Your Honor, RCM 502D5 says that trial counsel will prosecute the case, and inherent in that is that they will...
Trial counsel did prosecute the case, but 705 says he can initiate, participate in negotiations. The STIP's part of negotiations. Where's that leave us?
Your Honor, the SJA was certainly able to be a part of the pretrial agreement negotiations and receive...
He represents the convening authority. The convening authority is half of this contract. The accused is the other half. He represents the convening authority. How can there be PTA if he doesn't? Who advises the convening authority?
So the SJA would advise the convening authority about whether or not that term has been met. However, the pretrial agreement in this case just said that the accused agrees to enter into a reasonable stipulation of fact. It doesn't provide specific terms, and it doesn't provide that the stipulation of fact will be signed at the time the pretrial agreement is signed, or anything like that. And so the SJA...
Does it turn on that? I mean, if the pretrial agreement in its text says he'll enter into the following stipulation, da, 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 as opposed to he'll enter into a reasonable stipulation, and here's the stipulation, da, da, da. Somebody's got to represent the convening authority. I don't quite understand your argument.
Yes, Your Honor. The most paramount concern is that the SJA and the convening authority remain impartial when they're conducting a post-trial review. If they become involved in the actual terms of a stipulation of fact, a prosecution exhibit admitted at trial, then there's at least an appearance that they are no longer neutral if they're insisting on specific terms, specific aggravating terms, and at that point they're impartial. So their involvement should be a part of the pretrial agreement, but the stipulation of fact is a discrete entity.
So, counsel, I understand your theoretical point about a stipulation of fact essentially being within the province of the trial counsel. But in terms of practical effect, as the Chief Judge noted, under 705, an SJA is explicitly authorized to initiate, at least, the negotiations. If an SJA were to say to trial defense counsel, listen, I think we can work things out here. You just have your client concede, and I'm not speaking about this case, but a hypothetical case, that this occurred in the stipulation, then I'm fine with saying this would be the maximum sentence, and we'll get it smoothly past the convening authority. What would be wrong with that? And if there is nothing wrong with that, where are you drawing the border in terms of making stipulations border impermeable here?
Yes, Your Honor. And so the line that we draw is that when an SJA becomes directly involved in the actual terms, at some point they lose their neutrality. And so to answer your question, the problem in that scenario is that at some point, if the SJA is insisting on specific terms, specific aggravating terms, and it appears that they're no longer neutral, then in that case, they would be disqualified from providing post-trial advice to the convening authority.
Now, I recognize that it's the defense position that the SJA was, quote, insisting, end quote, mm-hmm. on this. From his perspective, he says, I was simply providing options. Those two things don't seem to me to necessarily be in conflict. He could be simply saying, listen, either you agree with this, or I'm not going to recommend to the CA that he approve this. That could be perceived as insisting on the part of defense, but simply laying out options on the part of the SJA. Again, how would we, in an opinion, spell out, how would we provide guidance to the field about what's permissible here and what's not?
Yes, Your Honor. And so we know that there was a difference in what happened, because by the ADC saying that the SJA was insisting on these specific terms, the SJA himself said that was a mischaracterization. He seemed to say that's actually not what happened, both in his addendum to the SJAR and then later in his affidavit for this appeal. And so our position is the SJA's words say that those were two different things. Insisting is not what he said he did. As far as the guidance to the field, the government concedes that this is an unusual step, that for the practical reasons of wanting to have a stipulation of fact and PTA together, what the SJA did in this case, as the government concedes, was an unusual step. Even the Air Force Court made it a point to not endorse this type of conduct. And so the advice to the field can be an SJA should not get directly involved with the negotiation of specific terms and the stipulation of fact.
Well, then is 705 a dead letter?
No, Your Honor.
He can initiate, but he can't negotiate. Is that it? Is that where you draw the line?
Your Honor, he can negotiate.
You speak of specific terms, and you're not limiting it to a step. If he gets involved, I don't know how he can negotiate a PTA or participate in negotiation of a PTA without getting involved with specific terms. That's the whole entity.
Your Honor, our position is that the stipulation of fact, it is a separate entity that doesn't have to happen at the time of the pretrial
agreement. Well, that's not what you just said. You said when the SJA gets involved in the negotiation of specific terms, which I took to not be limited to the step, he trespasses. I'm still out trying to find out what he can do. Is it simply that he can kick the ball into the field and say, okay, let's talk about you go talk to the trial counsel about a PTA. Is that it?
Your Honor, the trial counsel is responsible for the stipulation of fact. The term in the pretrial agreement is just a reasonable stipulation of fact.
Right.
If the SJA gets any more, insists on anything in the actual stipulation of fact, then the SJA can do that, but they are disqualified from providing post-trial advice to the convening authority.
So if that's the case, trial counsel comes to the SJA and says, this is what we worked out, me and the defense counsel. And the SJA says, no way. You go back and you tell that defense counsel that unless he puts into the stipulation the amount, the number of times that drugs were used, I'm not going to give the thumbs up to the convening authority. Would that disqualify an SJA? Is it the personal communication, or is it the position that the SJA is taking?
Your Honor, it's both. It's our position that it's
so
both.
So an SJA can't say to a trial counsel, no, I'm not going to approve this. I'm not going to go to the convening authority and recommend that this be approved?
That's our position, Your Honor, because if in that case the SJA is insisting either through direct participation with the ADC or through his trial counsel that they have specific aggravating terms that goes from more than once to...
Why isn't that an abdication of his role of helping the convening authority perform his functions as convening authority?
Your Honor, the role of the SJA is to be neutral, and in that case... He would no longer be acting as a neutral party or neutral advisor in post-trial processing.
Well, then, are you saying there's a structure? I still don't get this. And Judge Olson makes the point I was going to make, which is, how can he advise the convening authority under what you're arguing? I mean, even if he steps back... If the trial counsel negotiates a draft that he thinks one is bad as a matter of policy, or two, the convening authority will never buy. He can't tell his subordinates to go back and do it over.
Your Honor, it's our position that if the SJA is insisting on make this stipulation a fact.
No. Now you go back to stipulation. I'm talking more general terms, and you seem to be saying that he can't do that, or if he does do that, he's disqualified from doing the SJA review, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And
okay, so it's a structural problem. Because he's the SJA and he's supposed to write the review, but 705 says he can participate. So where does that leave us?
Your Honor, he is authorized to be a part of the pretrial agreement and negotiate the terms.
He has to be, because it's a contract between the accused and the convening authority, and the convening court has got to be advised by somebody, and that's the SJA's job.
Again, I'm concerned about how this plays out in the real world, mm-hmm. practical effect. If we were to adopt this approach, tell me why this isn't the problem that would occur in the real world. Sometimes stipulations of fact can be quite complicated, number of different points. Trial counsel says, this is what I worked out with trial defense counsel, SJA. SJA says, okay. Then says to convening authority, I don't recommend that you take this. Convening authority says, nope. But the SJA, from your position then, can't go back to the trial counsel and say, this is how we cure this. This is how we get past this roadblock. Instead, why aren't the trial counsel and trial defense counsel left with this guessing game about, gee, what did the SJA find unacceptable?
Your Honor, if the SJA, the SJA could do that. If the SJA was so invested in the case to want these specific terms in there, he or she could do that. But then it's at that point just from an appearance sake, and an SJA is required to not only be objective but appear objective, in that case, if they're insisting on specific terms like that that are so aggravating, then the remedy is that they cannot be a part of the post-trial process when they're advising the convening authority about whether or not to grant the accused or the accused relief. So
would that happen then any time an SJA, except for the quantum, recommends to a convening authority that he or she not accept the deal? Because then there's this, from your perspective, this personal investment on the part of the SJA. The SJA is saying to the convening authority, don't accept this. So is any time that an SJA say to his convening authority, I recommend that you reject this, is the SJA disqualified?
No, Your Honor, and it's just at the point where they're, again, negotiating specific terms in the stipulation of fact. In that case, in this case and in others, the trial counsel is not an empty vessel. They understand the case. They're charged with prosecuting the case, and they should be able to discuss with defense counsel what is reasonable stipulation of fact. It's left to the trial counsel to negotiate what is reasonable in a stipulation of fact.
Mr. Chief Justice, well, may I ask a question?
Go ahead.
You don't have any objection to the term in the pretrial agreement that the accused would enter into a reasonable stipulation of fact. Am I correct about that? That term is a proper term.
Chief Justice, look at, I see a
yes. Thank you. Go ahead. And Judge Ryan still has the opportunity to ask questions. Go ahead, Bert.
We would agree that's a reasonable term.
And would it be an unreasonable term if it said the accused will enter into a reasonable stipulation of fact, comma, and we both agree that a reasonable stipulation of fact will include admission to X number of uses of drugs? And that's in the PTA. It doesn't, it's not part of the stip, but it just put it in the PTA. The SJA had initiated a negotiation that involved that term, would the SJA then be recused?
So, if the SJA was the one that insisted on that term?
He says, let's enter into a pretrial agreement. I want all the standard terms, all the boilerplate, a reasonable stipulation of fact, which includes an admission of at least X uses of drugs. And so they put that in the PTA. Now, they're not negotiating the stip, but it's just further specification in the PTA as to what the stip would say. Would that be permissible?
Your Honor, likely not. And Judge Key talks about this in his dissent, that it's written as a reasonable stipulation of fact as opposed to specific terms, because if the convening authority or his or her legal advisor is putting in specific terms that are aggravating terms, then at some point they lose their appearance of impartiality. So in that case, there's possibility.
Even though that's still negotiating the PTA, and we're not doing the stip, so there are substantive limitations even on the negotiation of the PTA, in your view.
Yes, Your Honor. The concern about the SJA being impartial is still paramount, and even if they're authorized to participate in pretrial agreement negotiations, if that's in conflict with their role as an objective advisor, then that could be problematic, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Judge Ryan.
I have no questions.
I have none.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
Good morning, Chief Judge Tsuchiya and members of the court. May it please the court. My name is Major Dale Perkle, and along with my co-counsel, Ms. Mary Ellen Payne, I represent the United States in this matter. This case is resolved for the United States because appellant has failed to show a prima facie case that the staff judge advocate performed any duties reserved only for prosecutors, because appellant has failed to show a prima facie case that the SJA had anything other than an official interest in this case, appellant has failed to show a prima facie case that there is a material fact in controversy. To the contrary, the facts of this case show that the staff judge advocate acted within his express authority to negotiate a PTA.
Perkle?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. You would agree, though, with the lower court that this kind of participation is unwise, is it not? Or do you not agree?
We do not, Your Honor. And for reasons highlighted by Judge Mag's most recent question, that there is potentially a better way of effectuating this by putting the specific terms that are required within the PTA rather than having it in a phone call.
That's what I mean. I mean, this SJA seemed to be a little more insistent, a little more willing to be involved than you would normally see.
Yes, Your Honor.
And well, he may very well have been, as the CCA put it, well within his duties. He may very well be at the outer edge of those duties.
Yes, Your Honor. To answer your question, it is unusual that it happened, and there are a few reasons we believe that it was unusual. These are unusual facts. It's unusual for an accused to have used cocaine 150 times on active duty. And potentially it's unusual that a defense counsel would be so unreasonable as to not put that information, which is already in the possession of the government, in a stipulation of fact. It may be more common for the, as the lower court alluded to, the SJA to talk to the trial counsel, to talk to the defense counsel. But we do not believe this court should require the SJA to do his duties that are expressly allowed under RCM 705 through trial counsel or in the shadows. We believe that he has the authority either to directly call defense counsel and trial counsel, both parties, which he did in this case, or go through trial counsel.
Yeah. Let me ask this question as well. Why was the SJA so insistent on this? I mean, ultimately, of course, it's a judge-alone trial, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And ultimately, the accused got a bad conduct discharge in 5 months. What was the nature of the charge? Was he charged with diverse occasions?
Yes, Your Honor. There were several charges, diverse use of cocaine, diverse use of marijuana.
I used to say diverse.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, you might say tomato, too. So.
Yes, sir. So we addressed this in our brief, but a diverse use of cocaine could be one or more uses, which is what the defense wanted to put in. And the facts of this case were particularly aggravating, that this accused used cocaine 150 times within
the government apparently couldn't corroborate the numerous other uses, could they? I mean, that's what trial counsel actually admitted. He said his basic complaint was he was reluctant to want to put this in the stipulation because he knew there was no corroboration.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, the government had obtained immunity for a witness to testify had this gone to a litigated trial. At the time of PTA negotiations, the government had not yet found witnesses who could corroborate these uses, but it would be speculative to say that they couldn't have, at a litigated trial, actually corroborated the confession of the accused.
The victory was won. You got 150 uses of cocaine, and it's a special. I mean, somebody did a good job there for the accused.
Yes, Your Honor.
I can't imagine that quantum of drug use going to a special court martial, but it did.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the CA presumably signed off on that.
Yes, Your Honor, and in part because of his, potentially and likely because of his participation with OSI and being a confidential informant.
Being an informant, but still, yikes.
Yes, sir, and that would ultimately go to the question of prejudice in this case.
Well, it may go to the question of prejudice. I'm just kind of thinking out loud here, but go ahead.
Counsel, may I ask a question? I just want to make sure I understand the government's position here. Is it the government's position that an SJA may be completely and totally the driving force on the part of the government in terms of hammering out pretrial agreement and drafting a stipulation and still not be disqualified? Or is it the government's position that there is a line somewhere, but this SJA, under these facts, did not cross that line?
Your Honor, our position is the latter, and I think the Stefan test gets us there, that the context and the circumstances, the actions taken, what are the actions taken? In this case, the one narrow action of the SJA does not get us to a conflict in this case.
So in terms of this court, I think everyone recognizes this is unusual, the way this played out. if this court is going to issue a decision here, what guidance are we going to provide to the field where people going forward, an SJA in the future, will know I can go this far and no farther? How do we define that?
Yes, Your Honor. The court would look to RCM 705 and allow a staff judge advocate, as the staff judge advocate or the advocate on behalf of the convening authority, to freely communicate with all parties, trial counsel and defense counsel, when discussing the offer of a PTA, the terms of the PTA, performance of the PTA, and or withdrawal of the PTA. And so the context of the conversation is the conversation where the SJA is the only government representative who is communicating with the defense counsel. Has he literally stepped into the shoes of the trial counsel and replaced trial counsel in the case? I think that would be a closer call where he has crossed the line. However, our position is the free negotiation of the SJA is important for all terms. And we'd like to highlight that there are other terms of permissible terms of a pretrial agreement that in practice shape evidence that goes to a jury and affect what happens to an accused at trial. And so drawing the line that a stipulation of fact is a prosecution exhibit or ultimately presents evidence would be problematic because limitation of expert witness or testimony, limitation of objections to testimony, witnesses traveling, those are all things that happen in a litigated trial through the prosecutor and through evidence. And so we can't draw a line with the stipulation of fact simply because its ultimate goal is to present evidence to the trier of fact. Also, a stipulation of fact is not a creature of a PTA itself. It's governed by other rules for court-martial, is why it's a prosecution exhibit. It's why it's an exhibit entered into by both trial counsel and defense counsel. But as it was in this case, it was a term of an offer for a pretrial agreement. And so the opinion of this court must focus on that this is a case about a pretrial agreement discussion, not a case about a stipulation of fact. And in that context, and with the express authority of RCM 705, I think the opinion can be crafted in a way that allows the SJA to negotiate PTAs in terms of the PTA without crossing the line.
What about the defense argument that once the defense then raised this issue, this legal issue, and the SJA was in a position where he had to opine on the propriety of his own actions, that should have disqualified?
Yes, Your Honor. 2 points to that. First, there is no question that what the SJA did as a term of the pretrial agreement, or what he insisted, if we're going to use the defense's language, was included in the pretrial agreement, was illegal or wrong. So there is no question that the SJA was not asked to opine on the legality of his action. The only question is, if after taking the action, was he a trial counsel, or was he allowed to continue to be an SJA? That is a question of law that the SJA, just like a military judge, is asked to answer. He was allowed to answer. And sir, that brings me to a point raised by appellant in his reply brief, which is the issue of waiver. The pretrial agreement was signed by this SJA on 15 March and by the convening authority on 16 March. The accused trial was several days after that in March. And during the care inquiry and the PTA colloquy with the accused, looking at the signature of this SJA as an acting SJA did not raise the issue with the trial judge. Further, as a term of this pretrial agreement, the accused agreed to waive all waivable motions, and the conflict of an SJA is a waivable motion. And so we do think there's an argument to be made that this objection was actually right prior to trial, and that by failing to bring it to the court's attention at his guilty plea, and the fact that he waived all waivable motions, there's an argument to be made that he waived the ability to object.
But isn't his complaint that the SJA should not have weighed in on the clemency matters post-trial?
Ma'am, if I may just repeat your question was, isn't the issue about his ability to give clemency?
Isn't his complaint about the SJA's participation in post-trial matters?
Yes, Your Honor. That is his complaint, but the issue is ripeness. His ultimate point is that the SJA transformed himself into trial counsel during that phone call. And if that were the case, he could no longer serve as staff judge advocate on the case going forward in any way, shape, or form.
He doesn't do anything until there's a conviction, right?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, the staff judge advocate did sign the pretrial agreement after that phone call as the staff judge advocate, which was entered into court and discussed with the accused.
Counsel, may I ask you about RCM 502D5? This goes to the question of whether the SJA acted as trial counsel, and appellant in the brief, and then also Judge Key in the lower court opinion, suggest that 502D5, which is the provision that says the trial counsel gets to decide what evidence to put on behalf of the government, if the SJA is doing that, does that make the SJA trial counsel under 502D5?
No, Your Honor, not if the SJA is doing that in his role with respect to negotiating a PTA offer or agreement. And the distinction is, as I mentioned, other terms of the pretrial agreement where evidence is being shaped that's going to go to trial, things that they're asking the accused to waive, witnesses that he will not travel, he will not put on evidence, he will not object, those are all ways that evidence is shaped at trial. And those are all terms that have not been challenged, nor do those make an SJA a prosecutor any more than a stipulation of fact. What the convening authority of the staff judge advocate finds reasonable in that case transforms them into a prosecutor. And as the lower court noted, the timing and context of these facts are very important, that this did not happen on the eve of trial. This did not happen in the courtroom. This happened before a PTA was signed. This happened outside the court, and it happened specifically within the negotiation for the defense to submit a pretrial agreement offer. And so when we're talking about 502, we believe that we're talking about what happens within the context of a trial. And this case is not about a trial. It's about what happens before that, which is under RCM 705.
So you would handle this hypothetical differently then. Suppose the accused is unable to obtain an agreement with the convening authority, but she wants to impress the military judge, it's a judge alone trial, and kind of just come forward with be as forthcoming as she can. And she offers to engage the government on a stipulation of fact. And the government trial counsel says, yeah, I think that's a good idea, let's do it. And the SJA then steps in and says, hey, I heard you're negotiating a stipulation of fact. I think you need to put X, Y, and Z in there. Is that different than the context that you just described here in this case?
Yes, Your Honor, it is different.
So you would say in that case it's actually the SJA participating as the trial counsel, right?
Yes, Your Honor, that would be a stipulation of fact governed by RCM 811 and happening during the trial. And okay. So as a very different situation and certainly not what the facts have here.
I understand.
Is there, as I ask the other counsel, is there a structural problem here in the collision of two rules? The SJA is supposed to be some sort of neutral arbiter when he writes the review, but over here he's negotiating terms for the PTA.
No, Your Honor, we don't believe there's a structural issue. The negotiation is on behalf of the convening authority, who has a role in the Justice Assembly.
Well, the SJA review is to give to the convening authority.
Yes, Your Honor.
So where does that leave us?
Well, Your Honor.
Can he wear both these hats? Can he juggle both these balls?
We believe he can, Your Honor, in the same way that this court has found that the SJA giving pretrial advice does not conflict an SJA from giving post-trial advice. In this way, the negotiation on behalf of the convening authority and all of the government interests that support pretrial agreements in this case ultimately, if what the convening authority of the SJA or trial counsel or defense counsel are asking for is unreasonable, an agreement won't be had, and all these facts would fall away, and there'll be a litigated trial, and the sacrilege advocate would be allowed, again, to provide advice. So the fact that in this situation, what the SJA insisted on actually came to fruition was by choice of the appellant. Had this conversation happened and the appellant decided not to enter into this pretrial agreement, the SJA would not have been conflicted from giving post-trial advice from the litigated trial because he did not in any other way shape the evidence at the trial.
Well, you know, the accused can always say, nah, I don't want this deal. Prove it up. So.
Your Honors, I'd like to talk briefly about prejudice in this case. Even if this court were to find that the accused has shown a prima facie case for an SJA disqualification in post-trial advice, this is not a case where it should find prejudice. The accused who used cocaine 150 times, marijuana 4 times, 40 times, and on multiple occasions distributed both cocaine and marijuana, who had a record of nonjudicial punishment for underage drinking, a record of counseling for being late, a letter of counseling for being late to work, a letter of reprimand for being late to work, a letter of reprimand for failing to pay for a haircut, a letter of counseling for failing to maintain dorm standards, nonjudicial punishment for failing to report to work on time, vacation action of nonjudicial punishment for violating restriction, and a prior and still deferred plea of guilty to a misdemeanor assault in the territory of Guam is not a candidate for clemency. And in this case, there's no colorable argument that a different SJA reviewing the facts of this case, what the accused pled guilty to, the additional sentencing evidence that was presented, including the accused work as a confidential informant and his subsequent use of drugs after his work as confidential informant, would in any way be a candidate for clemency. Furthermore, the accused got a sentence that was below the negotiated pretrial agreement cap, and he was already at a special court-martial. Finally, the recommendation by the statute advocate in this case is, by all accounts, a plain vanilla recommendation that the accused not be granted clemency. Sir, if there are no further questions, I will briefly conclude.
Judge Ryan?
I have no further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to start just by readdressing Judge Maddox's question. To clarify, it would certainly depend on the circumstances if a pretrial agreement had that specific term. The most, I guess, important circumstance would be whether it was offered by the accused, if the accused, for his or her benefit, put that term in there. That would be different than a convening authority insisting on specific drug uses or an SJA insisting on specific drug uses. Again, it's our position that the appearance of neutrality would be different if the accused, for example, offered that specific term. The next thing I'd like to address is just pointing this court to the plain language of 705, that it discusses a pretrial agreement, but it differentiates that pretrial agreement with the stipulation of fact. 705C2 mentions the stipulation of fact as, again, something different, that just because a PTA has a stipulation of fact as one of its terms, they are indeed different. Government counsel mentioned 811, the rule about stipulations, in response to Judge Sparks' question. RCM 811 doesn't make a distinction between stipulations of fact at trial or stipulations of fact drafted and signed pretrial. And then I also want to make clear our position that even if this court finds that the SJA didn't perform the role as trial counsel, in his addendum to the SJAR, if you look at that paragraph, on JA-29, when he's discussing this issue, he does both a factual determination of what happened when he says a conversation raised by defense counsel centered on certain facts, and he goes into what he believes happened. So he's doing a factual determination of his own conduct. And then prior to that, he's doing a legal review of his conduct, and when he says that argument, too, is without merit. And so even if this court finds that he wasn't performing the role of trial counsel, he certainly was disqualified when he was put in the position to review the correctness of his own actions, the legal implications of those actions, and when there was that material factual controversy about what happened. And then finally, in addressing prejudice, the prejudice occurs not at trial on what sentence he got, but the prejudice is during the clemency portion, when in this case he had a realistic chance at clemency. He was merely requesting a couple days to a couple weeks relief. The ADC described the convening authority as a very reasonable man. There was several mitigating factors, including the fact that the Emory Bassi Chandler was a sexual assault victim in his time in the Air Force.
With his record and it already having been bargained down to a special, he had a realistic chance at clemency?
Your Honor, yes, Your Honor, and the threshold for an appellate showing prejudice is just some colorable showing of possible prejudice. And in this case, the SJA, he was objected to by the ADC. He believes what the ADC said was a mischaracterization in front of the convening authority, his boss. And then that same convening authority goes to the convening authority and advises about whether or not to grant relief to this accused. With that low threshold, this court cannot be confident that another SJA being involved wouldn't have had some type of effect on the outcome. Pending any further questions, that concludes my
Mr. Chief Judge, may I ask a question?
Judge Maddox.
I know you addressed this on page 5 and 6 of your reply brief, the issue of waiver, but could you respond specifically to the government's argument just now that the issue of whether the SJA had to recuse himself was ripe at the time that pleas entered, because already after having insisted on this term in the stipulation, the SJA had taken a further official action, which was to sign the PTA. And so a motion would have been ripe, and it's a waivable motion, and by entering the pleas, any objection to the SJA's participation was waived.
Our position is that it's not ripe until the time when he actually decides to draft the SJAR. At the time of trial, the judge or the parties don't know if the SJA is indeed going to recuse himself. During that trial, the SJA could think about it and say, you know, it's best for both parties that I'm not involved in the SJAR.
Could he have signed the PTA, in your view?
Yes, Your Honor. Our position is that his actions, he could suddenly be involved as a legal advisor about that pretrial agreement, but at that point, he was disqualified from providing post-trial advice when the convening authority is deciding whether or not to grant the accused relief. And so in this case, the defense counsel, prior to clemency, requested a legal office, that they get a different legal officer to advise the convening authority. And then when the SJA drafted the SJAR, again, they objected and said, you should have a different legal officer providing advice to the convening authority, a qualified one who is neutral.
Thank you.
Judge Ryan?
I have no questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted, and the court is in recess pending further order of the court.